Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
I have seen two UFOs, and my husband has seen, I believe, five, he said. And also his family has been victimized by the abduction phenomenon, we believe, for maybe multiple generations.
And tell me about your experiences, first of all, Leslie, and then we'll get to your husband.
Okay. My first UFO was in 2005. I saw a white light in the sky. We were both in a car driving west on Highway 62 in Joshua Tree towards our Yucca Valley home. The light, it was just a white light with no accompanying lights, and it got brighter and brighter. And then it seemed to just be hovering straight in front of us or coming straight towards us. And then suddenly it shot away over the northern horizon and gone in about a quarter of a second. It streaked out into a long line, and then the line disappeared. It had to be moving at least 10,000 miles an hour, I would guess. Something we simply cannot do. And then Stephen was present for my second UFO, which was again a white light moving in the sky in such a way that we just cannot move. It was making Y turns at speed, at accelerating way beyond what we can do. And again, shot away to the north at supersonic speed.
And that second sighting, was at Joshua Tree as well, or where was that?
No, we were living in Desert Hot Springs and looking up in the sky. So similar region.
Okay. And that's California, correct?
Yeah, Southern California.
Gotcha. And so I love the area where you guys live. I imagine there's a lot of sightings in that area. I don't know, but is it? I mean, do you guys have a lot of sightings?
Yes, Joshua Tree is particularly famous for it.
Yeah, got you. And tell me about your husband's sighting. Or your husband, Stephen, tell me about your sightings.
Yes, okay. My first sighting happened when I was around 10 or 11 years old. It was a very bright orange round, basically globe. And it was hovering and moving in a very continuous manner going from north to south. I even called the Griffith Park Observatory about it. It was something that it was not a plane. That's for sure. The second one happened when I was at a restaurant off of Malibu called the Chart House. And both myself and the valet saw this bright white light once again. But this one was off the coast and it was doing the zigzag movements. And this was around the time that the Boston Red Sox were playing the Yankees in some playoff game. So I remember roughly it was around 2005, and we didn't know what to make of that. Then I saw one coming in broad daylight. I saw one that a lot of people saw in Joshua Tree and Yucca Valley that was just hovering in the air. It was a very bright silverly white object. And then the last two were the ones that Leslie just described. The one thing I would say as far as the second one we saw here in Desert Hot Springs is it was making the zigzag movements. And again, it was soundless, just impossible movements. And we definitely know it was not a drone. It wasn't a laser or anything like that.
Yes, most people report that UFOs are silent, with the exception of sometimes it has a low hum that's felt more than heard.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, since you both saw the sighting around the desert area there, very near Joshua Tree, do you know if other people saw the same thing that you saw?
Actually, I was able to find out after we saw our most recent sighting that there was a couple that was living on the same street as we are still living currently, and they also saw the object at the same time that we saw it.
Yes, that was the Desert Hot Springs sighting. But as far as we know, the Joshua Tree sighting we hadn't heard any other corroboration.
Okay, I understand. And tell me, have you had any kind of significant sighting lately that's maybe, you know, made the news or something like that they've talked about?
Well, the Desert Hot Springs sighting was just about 2 years ago. fairly recent.
Was it?
These don't.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. They don't happen often, obviously. I'm 64 years old, and I've only seen it twice.
But anything reported by the news, though, is what I'm trying to find out. Is
no.
Nothing picked up by the media. Okay. And all right. So let me ask. So have you witnessed anything else strange in your life, or just any kind of other strange phenomena in your life, whether it be that or, you know, paranormal experiences or anything like that?
I don't know how much that you've read about in the book, but I've had more than my share of experiences. Direct contact, as a matter of fact, it's in the foreword.
It's in the preface of
the book. Yes, I mean, I definitely have had that at least since the age of three, and even pretty much up into the currently. But the most significant one, as far as evidence, what happened when I was 18. When I was working as a cabinet maker with my father, at that point, we were living together with my sister, and we had our shop in the garage. So anyway, I had gone to sleep in my work clothes from the day before, and I woke up about 5:30 in the morning, and I was fully awake. I was sleeping on the couch in the living room, and I looked at my piano because I'm a pianist and a professional musician, part-time. And I was listening to the little fountain. We had a goldfish and little fountain. So I thought, well, maybe we should get up and maybe play the piano a bit. But anyway, to make a long story short, from behind me, from the front door, it's like maybe 30 feet behind me, I saw or I felt this blue-white presence move very quickly as if it was floating, but approximately about 6 to 7 feet tall. And the whole house was filled with this intense blue-white light. And it stopped by my right side. I was laying, you know, face up, and I felt it bend down to my ear and say in a whisper, "Hi, Steve." And at that point, the whole right side of my body, might as well just bisect my body, the whole right side of my body from head to foot became paralyzed. Not in a scary sense, but in the sense that I could not move. And I was half really excited. I said, boy, I'm going to see like what we call the family spirit guy called O'Glegley. That's what I was raised with. I was raised in a family that, you know, said, we have a family spirit guide. So I thought, oh, I'm going to see the family spirit guide, but I can't move. So part of me was terrified. The other part was excited. So anyway, it lasted for maybe 5 seconds to a minute, and then it left. I told my dad, then we went to work. About 11 o'clock in the morning, which is six hours later, I decided, you know, we're getting hungry. So I decided, hey, Dad, I'll go to Jack in a Box. So I reached in my right-hand side pocket, which just happened to have coins and nails in the pocket. So I put it on the board we're working on, and all the coins were magnetized. I could pick up the quarters with the nickels with the quarters. It didn't matter. My dad was looking at me and says, that's not possible. You cannot magnetize coins. So this was 6 hours after the event, and the only mistake I made was I didn't rush to go get a camera, but this 6 hours after this happened, whatever this entity did to me, which I saw as a tall, blue-white, skinny entity, that was physical manifestation that, to this day, I still cannot understand.
And Stephen's brother reported seeing a gray in his room right before he blacked out and had missing time. In fact, the whole family has a lot of missing time episodes where they were terrified. They thought they were about to see an alien and then suddenly blackout and loss of memory and waking up hours later in their beds when they were standing in a room as far as they last remembered.
That is just so weird and strange. And let me ask you something about the beings here. Okay, so when you saw the being, you said it was like, I guess, tall and bluish color. I mean, did it look solid? It looked solid. Like it wasn't like a you know, like a something that looked like apparition or nothing. I mean, it's like a solid being.
It was absolutely as if a tall 6 to 7 foot person that was of slender build just floated through the room or moved very quickly. And it was definitely about always For me, the entities have always been very intense blue-white, not solid white, not blue, but just that's just what how they manifest.
And they irradiate the room they're in with the light, or illuminate, rather.
And you can't, can you see features, like facial features, or?
I would say the head would be abnormally large as far as the skull. The eyes would be a lot larger than our eyes. Again, not menacing, but whenever a person feels like they can't move or they're restrained, there's going to be a certain element of fear. And that was just one of the incidents that I reported in the book. There are many others that my father and my sister all experienced together. And I've had my bed move and being pushed three different times and being tapped on the shoulder three times. And I've had multiple things happen throughout my life. And it's, you know, like say I grew up in a family that this stuff was talked about and was just considered to be not unusual. So, you know, it wasn't until fairly recently that I started thinking, well, perhaps this was actually more of an alien visitation. And I believe that's more correct.
Once he started researching about the abduction phenomenon, it rang a lot of bells that of what was going on in their family as well.
It sounds very familiar from my past interviews with other experiencers. I can tell you, I have read your preface and it is mind boggling. It's very shocking. The preface of your book is, it really is. I didn't expect that at all. And my condolences to your family, really.
Thank you.
It's so tragic. So tragic. Okay, so let's go on and go further into your book here. I want to talk about chapter. Let me see here. Let me go to the chapter. Thank you very much for signing the book, too. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you
for autographing it for me. I do appreciate that very, very much here. Let me get to the chapters. I'm sorry. And
you are so welcome.
Okay, let's talk about this is good. Let's talk about this is not two. OK, recent disclosures and a new government policy. OK.
Yes.
A joke or no? Serious, a joke, or what do you think about that?
Well, for 70 years, the government stonewalled us completely, as far as us, meaning ufologists and people interested in the subject. They said this isn't happening. It's swamp gas. It's not real. It's mass hysteria. Any possible explanation except that these UAPs and UFOs were real. But at the same time, they were keeping the information for themselves and discussing it back and forth in memos that it was a real phenomenon. And this is with Truman in the early 40s. Late 40s that this happened.
Also the Twining Memorandum.
And the Twining Memorandum, yes. That was an early memo from a general talking about how the UAP phenomenon, UFO phenomenon, was a real phenomenon. So they were keeping the information for themselves, but stonewalling the public. And then in 2017, Luis Elizondo, head of the ATIP program, released three videos and a story to the New York Times. And ever since then, the Department of Defense has changed their policy in how they respond. Right after these videos were released, the Department of Defense rather, released the videos in full and came out saying that they were real, that the phenomenon is real. It is not a made up phenomenon. They still pretend like they don't know what it is or what's going on. And we think that is a disingenuous lie as well, because we think they have crashed alien ships dead alien bodies and possibly some live ones too.
You know what? I don't know. I feel like it's the recent hearing that they had. Do you guys watch that?
Yes.
Okay. Oh yeah.
I felt like it was very surface and just for show. It was a lot of questions asked that the one gentleman, he couldn't elaborate on because of security clearances and so forth.
Mr. Grush. Yeah.
Right. Mr. Grush. And I do understand that. But still, nothing came of that for me. I mean, I've heard everything that they actually repeated. The one thing I'm wondering is if, and I'm wondering to get your opinion on this, are they kind of easing into this type of disclosure to maybe lessen the blow, and hopefully these people will not be, I think they're hoping they will not be brought up on charges, because they did mention and ask them, okay, how would a program like this or programs like this, you know, where would the money come from?
Yeah, where would it be funded?
Yeah, where are you getting it from? So you're taking money from somewhere. And
they just said it. We were just sneaking it out of other programs.
Exactly.
It's definitely misappropriation.
That's right. Sure. Misappropriation, big time. Just falling off in a big black hole and nobody knows where the money's going. But do you think that anyone is going to be brought up on charges at the end of all of this? Because seem like they're slowly disclosing what's happening and what's been happening.
Well, as far as the charges, we don't know, but as far as
give me your gut on it.
I don't believe so. I don't think it's in their best interest. At this point, everybody has got a camera on them. We got 7 billion cameras, for one thing, and they have not refuted it. They say they're taking the golly gee, we don't know what these are, but they are, but they're posing no threat. They're every time you hear when they talk about it, they're not talking about ever, they're talking about them being a threat to our security. They talk about them being real. And by the way, this David Grush, he said he was going to, in the near future, present eyewitnesses that will come forward. He also mentioned, too, that in 4 years, he's interviewed up to 40 different witnesses that have either had direct experience with the technology or what they call the non-biologics or the non-humans. Also, too, they mentioned, I don't know if you saw it, but this morning there was a scientist that works out of Harvard, and they are investigating pieces of an object that crashed somewhere off of Borneo a while ago. And they're analyzing to see if these pieces they have found are either possibly microchips or something that we cannot make ourselves at this point. So I don't think anybody, it would not be in their best interest for them to, you know, for instance.
And a lot of people who instigated these policies in the 40s are dead and gone. So we're not going to be prosecuting them. But of course, you know, we don't know about prosecution, but we do know about the phenomenon. They're definitely talking about a real existing phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you don't know. And I don't know either. I just feel like nothing's going to.
I do have something very, as far as for me, being kind of scientifically minded myself because of what I did as a profession. We saw Linda Moulton Howe, I'm sure you're familiar with her. We saw her at Contact at the Desert, and she did a presentation on disclosure. And some pieces of UAPs or UFOs have been collected and have been analyzed under electron microscopes, and it's fascinating what these things are made out of. We can't make them, and we know definitively, and I remember what they're made out of. They're made out of the outer shields, made out of 200 to 400 micron in size, combination of zinc and zinc is one of the elements. The middle layer is 2 to 4 micron size of bismuth, which is almost impossible to get a hold of. And then the inner layer is made out of absolutely pure aluminum with little dots of iridium. And as far as we know, iridium only comes from meteorites. So this technology, which is a layered type of shield that somebody or some entities have made, is something that is way beyond our technology right now.
And yet she has pieces of it. And they've been
established as being true and real.
Yeah, Linda's great. She really is. I was actually going to bring her into Knoxville to do a private VIP type lecture. It's very skilled.
She's the first lady of our profession.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Okay. So let's go to your book, and I find it fascinating that you went back and you referred to the Bible and talking about the Great Flood and discussing the UFOs and things, and tell me why you felt that was significant.
This is a critically important event. We've been looking for this meteor or asteroid crater for a long time. We knew it existed because nanodiomes were discovered in the Ucello horizon. That's a layer of soil 13,000 years old, and it was laid down showing a conflagration of massive proportions. Essentially, 10 countries and 4 continents were on fire at the same time, indicating a celestial event of some kind, a meteor or asteroid. And also, when nanodiomes form, they form no other way than a celestial impact event. The asteroid comes through the atmosphere, bringing dust particles with it, and those dust particles are superheated, and they form these microscopic little round diamonds that form in no other way. So, and then 13,000 years ago, there was the relatively large extinction event on the North American continent, and nobody was pointing to the cause and attributing the cause to the Clovis people of the mammoth extinctions, which is patently ridiculous. But once the nanodiamonds were found, we knew we were looking for a celestial impact event of some kind. And sure enough, in 2016, an asteroid impact crater was discovered in northern Greenland. The ice sheet had melted back enough to where it exposed the crater to discovery. And it happened 13,000 years ago, and we believe it's the cause of all of the flood myths worldwide. There's 1,200 or so separate cultures with a flood myth in their most ancient lore, pointing to a worldwide shared event of some kind. And this changed the history of humanity and was one of the most important events to ever happen to humanity, and almost nobody knows about it, because the discovery is fairly recent. But it was critically important to our UFO theories that this crater finally be discovered. And when it was discovered, that was the moment where we decided, well, we can now write the book about it, about our theories.
And Stephen, do you have something to add to that?
Yes. I always tend to be a little bit humorous when I try and say things, but Leslie likes to use the forensic file method with the Sherlock Holmes method as far as investigating things, which I really respect. And for instance, the Ucello event horizon would be like, okay, we have the dead body. We just needed to find the murderer. So the murderer was the crater that was found in 2016. So, and they both yep. dovetail together exactly, which is quite interesting, especially when you look at things like Göbekli Tepe that has just recently been found that you're dating to be between like 12,900 years old and maybe older.
And it's called the Hiawatha asteroid because it crashed into the Hiawatha Glacier on northern Greenland. So if your listeners would like to look up the articles about it, they are fascinating read.
I will. I'll actually get those and I'll pass those along. Thank you for that information.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is just so fascinating. I have to go to your chapter. I could really do a very, very long interview with you. I want to talk about where they are. Okay, that's a really good chapter there. People have talked about, I want to know, let me ask you this, and I'm sorry, Leslie. People have talked about Alaska being like the perfect area, and I know they're supposed to be everywhere, but Alaska is so vast, there's so many areas that have never been even had a foot on it. I want to know from your general research, and we're going to talk about the book as well, but have you looked at, you know, phenomenon happening in Alaska? I mean, there's just an enormous number of people that go missing there all the yes. time anyway. But have you looked at phenomena in that
Absolutely.
State?
Absolutely. Alaska is a hotbed of UFO activity, Fairbanks area especially. And in UFO circles, ufology circles, we believe Mount Hayes, a 14,000-foot mountain in Alaska, is a hollowed-out joint alien/military base.
From your research, where have you gathered that information?
Well, it's the Alaska MUFON is where we first heard about this information. And we also saw a program about it. The Alaskan Triangle has an excellent program called The Mysteries of Mount Hayes. I recommend that to be for your listeners to see. And we first heard about it through that program. And then, of course, once we learned about something on television, we must research it further. And so we dove into the research. Linda Moulton Howe is, we spoke about her earlier. She's the one that has been doing most of the research on both Mount Hayes and also the Black Pyramid complex, which is supposed to be another ground pyramid in the Alaska wilderness that also is a joint military slash alien base.
And there was a remote viewer also that actually saw something happening.
Absolutely. It was,
I think it was Pat Price, wasn't it, Pat?
Yes, Pat Price. He's one of the more famous remote viewers from that military program that the U.S. had going. Russia was doing it, so that means we have to do it too, right?
Exactly.
The interesting thing with Pat Price was his accuracy and also his background as being a Los Angeles cop, I believe.
Yeah, Burbank police officer.
Yes, and he was starting to come forward with some of this information, and lo and behold, guess what?
He ends up dead.
He ends up dead, so... Not an uncommon thing to happen.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a very suspicious death, too, in my opinion. And we believe he's one of the people that was silenced through the Operation Blue Book program.
I believe so, too. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, shortly after, when they're remote viewing, I mean, for some reason, his consciousness got to that area.
Yes, they call it an attractor. It's actually something that does happen with remote viewers. They'll be flying through airspace, and they'll feel an attraction to a location.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And the guy was spot on. I mean, he was very accurate. And then he ends up gone, somebody.
Right. And there's the corroboration of lots of UFO activity around Mount Hayes.
Yeah. I find Alaska fascinating, and I will never go there. I don't want to go to Alaska.
Cold.
I know it is. There you go. That's one good reason not to go. I don't like cold weather, but yeah, people just disappear like out of nowhere there. I don't know what's happening.
I believe there have been 16,000 unexplained disappearances in the last 30 years.
Yeah. Is that crazy?
That is crazy high, but Alaska is a dangerous place and presumably would have a slightly higher disappearance rate than other locations, but that's crazy high.
And it's not due to bears and things such as that.
Well, some bears.
Since 1988, it's like around 18,000, 16 to 18,000.
I think it's 16. Yeah.
Yeah, it's close, but it's for the number of people that live in Alaska and visit Alaska, it's an inordinately
high number. Absolutely. And do you think those people may have been taken, maybe?
Yes, we do. Most of the time when abductees are taken, they're returned home, no harm, after their genetic samples are taken. But what if they need a human brain for their studies or a human heart for their studies? Then that would be the person they take.
Or the entire human for their
studies. Don't put back.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's what's happening, too, is that in some cases, the people are taken and put back, and then in some cases, they're taken and not put back.
You're right. We always talk about the ones that are taken and come back. What about all the people that are taken and you never see them again? So,
right. The remote viewers, some of them say that they witness actual experimentations done on humans and in some cases, dissections. So obviously, the dissected humans are not being put home.
Yeah.
Returned home.
I'll tell you another thing, and I'd like to get Stephen's take on this. I've conducted a few, maybe more than that, and it's been a long time. But when I conduct an interview with some of these people that reportedly have been abducted, I always ask them, I mean, when you look around, are you seeing other human beings inside these ships and things? And sometimes they say, yeah. So I wonder if, they are taken and they're kept, so that when they have contact with other human beings, they kind of put them at ease or for some other reason. I don't know. But if they have them like normal citizens that have been taken and they use them, as part of their agenda in some sort of way.
I think that is happening. When we first started looking at the abduction phenomenon, we noticed that the theories about it were not lining up with the facts about it. The theory is that, oh, aliens are just curious about us and they want to take some samples and study us further. But that theory does not line up with the evidence that we have. What's happening instead is that they're taking the same people over and over and over again through their lives. And then when they become too old to have viable genetic material, they start taking their children. And then they start taking their grandchildren. And it tends to be a family phenomenon. Also, it also tends to be mostly a Caucasian phenomenon. I heard Linda Moulton Howe say years ago about 9 and 10. And in our book, we found a survey that we refer to where it's about 95% as a Caucasian phenomenon. So for whatever reason, they want the same Caucasian DNA at regular intervals from the same people over and over again.
And what I found fascinating too was the fact that cow mutilations, if they were just interested in, you know, getting samples of domesticated animals, why always just take the skyward facing eye and always take the sexual organs and always exsanguinate, you know, take all the blood of the animal? It looks like they're harvesting a product because they actually need that product, not as a delicacy, but actually for their own sustainability as a species.
That's what we think. They're harvesting DNA, not because they're curious about us, but because they need it.
They need it, yeah. I've heard that too. And that is fascinating, and listeners should look into that a little more. I wanted to ask you about other places where reported facilities may be. Tell me about any of those that you've heard about or that you know.
There's
about
a famous one, the Archuleta Mesa and the, what's it, the Dulce Papers? So it's the Dulce base in New Mexico is supposed to be 7 levels underground, going about down about 2 miles, the bottom 2 levels of which are joint alien/military personnel. And the upper 5 levels are all human, and frequently those people in those upper 5 levels know nothing about the bottom 2 levels.
There's also Mount Kailash, that's, we also believe, has...
Yes, UFO activity. Mount Mycenae in Italy. Brown Mountain in... Is that North Carolina or South Carolina?
That's North Carolina. That's very close to me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. You're in that region of the country.
And of course, the Hudson Bay area has...
There's got to be a base somewhere in the Hudson Bay area because of how many people have been victimized by the abduction phenomenon in that region and how prevalent UFO activity is.
In the Hudson Bay. UFOs right. Reportedly going in and out of the water there, or...?
Yes. We do hear about that, about lakes.
And there's been a lot, too, around the southern part of Lake Michigan. That's also a hotbed, too.
Lake Michigan is that a lot.
And, of course, the famous one, Mount Shasta.
Oh,
here.
And Mount Shasta. In fact, that's where we just went on our book tour last month. Mount Shasta is definitely a UFO hotbed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd love to go there. Did you see anything while you were there?
No, unfortunately. Nothing in the sky.
Okay. Well, actually, we did Bigfoot days, and Leslie got a picture with a Bigfoot impersonator.
I hear you. I love that. Okay.
Walked by our booth and said, Mr. Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Bigfoot. Photo.
That's great. That's great. That area, Mount Shasta, is on my bucket list. So hopefully I can make it there sometime. Just a beautiful area, really.
Beautiful.
It just slipped my mind here. I have to think about what else I was going to tell you. Let me ask you about, let me see here. Where do I want to go? I think I want to stay there on the, no. Let me ask you this. Okay, so during like wartime, you know, you see all the photos of they call them the little Foo Fighters, and they're like chasing the planes and things like that. There's got to be somewhere. I mean, they took a ton of photographs of, you know, the planes and things that were happening during wartime. I want to know, have you found anything besides the Foo Fighters? Maybe the classical, you know, saucer shaped. UFOs or anything like that, kind of chasing the planes or in the same area where the dogfighting was happening. Have you ever seen anything like that?
most impressive information we have is the Luis Elizondo videos that he released, in my opinion. He released these three videos, and anybody can see them online. It's called Gimbal, Go Fast, and Tic Tac.
Oh, yeah.
The Tic Tac incident especially is fascinating, reading all about it. We detail it in the book. The UAPs were spotted by radar at 80,000 feet, multiple ones. One of them shot down to the bottom of the, right to the, above the ocean in just seconds. And because it came so fast, it virtually appeared in front of two of our fighter jets. And then they tried to chase it, and it shot at 3,600 miles away in a matter of moments and appeared on radar. It appeared on radar 60 miles away, having traveled at 3,600 miles an hour to get there. And it's a long section of the book because it is such an important incident, especially. And I recommend your listeners hop onto YouTube and look at all three of these videos. They're all quite amazing.
And I will link to those. And those are really stunning. I do believe, though, that they're releasing the degraded versions of those videos, especially the Tic Tac. I believe that's, they've got it in great, stunning resolution. And they released the degraded, video to the public. So
that may be so. It's not really recognizable as what it is because it is in infrared. And most people you have to translate it into the fact that this thing is not black. It's white and it's
right. Right. And I've actually listened to the interview with Kevin Day, and he, he confirms, that video was in stunning detail, but he saw it and it was crystal clear. But
Day, I believe, was the radar operator on the Princeton that was part of the carrier group, the Nimitz carrier.
Group.
Right. Right. I'm hoping to get him on the show. He'd be a great guy to talk to. And I want to talk to you about ancient sites. You do talk about ancient sites in Peru. I know you mentioned Göbekli Tepe earlier, but sites in like Peru and even the Egyptian pyramid, where they just want us to. I personally do not believe human beings built those pyramids. I just don't. I don't know what you think, but I don't see how that's possible back then. It can't be done today. Okay, so how would they do that then?
We agree.
Yeah. So tell me your thoughts about that, and whether you think that that was possibly all those things were built by, alien entities or
whatnot. One of the things, one of the things I was in my past life, my recent past life, I was a builder, and I did a lot of concrete work and I did a lot of cabinet making. So I'm very, very familiar with how elements work. And I'm also an amateur geologist and things such as that. So Sacsayhuaman, the site Sacsayhuaman, which is, I found absolutely fascinating. Is that in Bolivia? It's next to La Paz, right, or something?
Yes.
It's
near Cusco.
If you've ever done any gold panning or any that kind of thing, where you use a sleuth, this site, it's in the book, a good picture of it. It looks like a giant sleuth. Sluicing station. And all the rocks, some of them are 50, 100 tons a piece, and they're all basically welded together. And they got this almost like a router joint, basically to smooth all the edges. These things, they have no purpose as far as for like a military strategy or military base. It's built as if they were harvesting something, like mining gold. There's no other reason or especially at the elevation above the tree line. Some of these sites are just, you're correct about the pyramids. A lot of people don't realize that inside the Great Pyramid, there's a type of rock that's number 9 on the Mohs scale, which is just one level below diamond. And it's got very fine filigree writing on it, which we can only do today with the strongest lasers or extremely high pressure water jets. And this is, why would they take the time to use a rock so hard to do these fine relief, like hieroglyphs?
You see, the 13,000 years ago, prior to the Hiawatha asteroid impact, we think there was a very advanced pyramid-building culture on the planet that we know very, very little about. Because the devastation of the Hiawatha asteroid impact was so complete, imagine 2,000-foot-high tsunamis scraping civilization off the planet. And the only thing it would leave behind are these megalithic constructs from a previous race that we know nothing about. And we know for a fact in Peru, for instance, they finally found some mesh netting material under one of the pyramids and tested it. And it shows that this pyramid was built 5,000 years ago. That's prior to, well, so there was a pyramid building society in Peru prior to the Incas. And yet modern mainstream archaeology is attributing these structures to the Incans, who were bronze tool people. And I assure you, Sacsayhuaman is built with andesite, which is harder than granite. And I assure you, you can take a bronze tool and whack it on a piece of andesite for 1,000 years, and you'll just wreck the tool. There's no way that these, and the pyramids as well, there's no way that the people to whom these are attributed could have had the technology to build. No way.
I totally agree. Absolutely agree. I wanted to ask you, have you ever seen any videos containing any type of alien entities that you believe were real? I mean, people, you know, it's so frustrating that you have all these people creating fake videos. But have you ever seen any real videos? I'm thinking about maybe like the video of Skinny Bob, where he was in a room and supposedly they had a meeting that was with, I think, the Russians. So you see these alien entities actually walking on an airstrip, and that was released secretly. I think it was at 2017. And so I had a researcher that actually referred to that. He said, have you seen that video? And I said, no. He says,
nor have we seen it.
You haven't seen it. Okay. Okay.
But I believe they use an electromagnetic dampening field when they take people. So all cameras are off when they're being taken.
Unless they're pre-digital, for instance, like the old Bolex, which are analog.
Yeah, like a spring-operated camera would work, but anything with requiring electricity of any kind would not.
Would not work, okay. And let me tell you something that was really, and I'll send you the video, the Skinny Bob. The remote viewer that actually worked for the government, actually, he actually went back and remote viewed that, or had his team do that. Look at that film and see if that was a real alien entity, and he said, yes, it was. And,
wow, I'd love to see it then.
I'll send it to you. I will send you the video. Absolutely. Tell me what else. Tell me anything. People also are trying to say that this is leading up to some type of deception. Have you found anything like that in your research? Do you feel like this is something that we need to be worried about?
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand the question.
The alien phenomena, the UFO phenomena. People think that this is leading up to some type of deception. I'm thinking about what is his name? Stephen Greer. Stephen Greer believes this is all lead up to some type of false flag event, alien invasion type event, for whatever reason, and that we should be very worried about what's happening. Do you feel that the phenomena is something to be worried about?
I don't believe so. Their technology is so far ahead of ours. If they were hostile, they could have done something about it a long time ago. But I'm seeing evidence of more like they're trying to do reintegration with us, or integration with us. The breeding, their bizarre breeding program, making hybrids of us, between us. We think that might be a step towards integrating into our society.
Yeah, but if you're doing that, then if they're doing that, then they're either taking reproductive, have to be taking reproductive material against our will, and that's not even, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's not something that a race of alien beings that had your best interests at heart would ever do. Would you agree with that?
I see it very much so as like a necessity. They need us. They need our genetic material, both for themselves, because what our theory and what we our research has shown is that they actually do need us. It's and of course too, there's going to be, you know, better and worse elements within their probably within their own society too. So yeah, they're not all benevolent. Like some people think there's going to be this great, you know, this great reveal and they're going to be all benevolent, but their actions do not show that. Their actions show that they are harvesting a product and they need us, you know, for their, basically for their own survival.
I'm going to ask you a hard question here. Okay. Now, and I understand you said that they need us, but we were just talking about people possibly are being disappeared by these things. Would you offer up yourself or your family to a alien race that decided they just needed us? You know.
Oh no, this is definitely a violation. It's it's kidnapping. It's medical experiments is against your will.
Yeah, I got
no,
you.
No, thank you.
I personally have no idea how much sperm they've taken from me. Uh-huh.
But you believe they've taken sperm from you, Stephen?
I've had so many missing time experiences, and I wouldn't be surprised.
That's exactly what we hear again and again and again on all the victimizations where they've done regression work and they do remember what happened to them. They all have, seems to be, a sexual genetic material taken. Sperm or eggs
Something
are
like
always
that.
Harvested. Almost. It's so common. In fact, most of the alien abduction cases that we've studied, it seems to be the same phenomenon over and over and over again. They take the people, they take their samples, and they put them back. And the aliens are never confused about what to do next. They're very goal-driven. What does change is humanity's explanation for the phenomenon. That is, it's gone through all these different morphs of this. It's like it's a psychological problem.
As an example, vampires. Okay, they come in the night, they hypnotize you, they are very powerful, they take your blood, and they leave. Okay, it sounds kind of similar to what's kind of happening
and
here.
And they paralyze you while you're they're doing it, hypnotize you or paralyze you. We do think the vampire, the entire mythos has come from the abduction phenomenon.
This is fascinating. Have you seen anything lately? Let me ask you that. Have you experienced anything lately, or Stephen, or Leslie?
Well, yes. I
go ahead and tell them about the few nights ago in the room.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yes. This is one of the chapters we talk about, you know, chanting and opening up the different chakras, which is a very real thing. Tai Chi and all this kind of stuff is very real. I've experienced that. I know it's true. So anyway, I've been practicing doing some of the chanting for the different chakras before going to sleep, and also practicing being able to wake up within a dream. If you can wake up during a dream saying, I'm dreaming, and either force yourself to look at the palms of your hands or just jump, you'll basically make the dream disappear and you will actually be in the astral, you'll be in the astral realm, basically. So I woke up inside my room, lying on the bed at nighttime, and I saw this dark entity, very tall, dark entity. And I asked, I said, what do you want? What do you want from me? And it didn't give me an answer, but it was trying to control me. And that was one of them. Another one, I was awakened by having like this shock happening in my head. And it was, I'm still getting visitations, or I'm getting things happening to me, even at the age of 63, that I've had so many, honestly, I've had so many happen in my life that it would take 10 hours for me to describe them. Frequently, I've been awakened when I'm trying to go to sleep with three distinct knocks on the wall behind my head, just like always in three. I've had that many times, and
tapped on his shoulder,
tapped on my shoulder. It's a real phenomenon that happened. And when Leslie started doing some of the work, she started to experience similar things. It's a human right we have to be able to, and a power we have to be able to astral project and basically be more than most people think. You know, we can do things such as remote viewing. We can astral travel. We can communicate with entities. I mean, it's a very real phenomenon.
When we were both studying the phenomenon, I mean, the abilities of astral projection, I was enjoying it, but whenever Stephen went astral, he would be plagued by entities bothering him. And we just don't know what's going on with that. We think he's essentially... Then I found this true for other people I've interviewed. It's when they're young, they're physically taken and physical samples are taken. But later in life, they're contacted more on a mental realm. And I'm not entirely sure how much physical contact continues. We're still studying the phenomenon in our own lives.
They're still physically contacting me and physical manifestations. When I go back to my chanting, my chakra opening, I get more of these things occurring because I make myself more open.
That is very interesting there. And I do believe there's something about you and your family. It's undeniable. I mean, that they're interested in or that they want. Have you ever found any kind of markings or cuts or anything like that as proof? Or maybe you're tracked or something like that?
We had an X-ray of Stephen's shoulder at one point that showed a little device in it. But then he had a very bad accident where he shattered his scapula. And subsequent X-rays don't show it there anymore. We think it was somehow removed during the scapular surgery.
It was your typical tracking device that you see people that have removed. No oblong shape. Had no reason to be there. We're so far away from the shoulder bone. We were just sitting there about maybe an inch below the surface
of
the muscle. It was metallic, and that was very interesting. My brother had a physical manifestation. He was being plagued by this red orb at the house that he had built up in Sonora, California. And it would, around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, he would go outside sometimes, and this orb would be kind of following him. And one time it actually rushed him and went through his body, through his neck area. And Leslie and I had just happened to be
visiting. We saw him the next day.
And he had a bruise on his back. So, whether that qualifies, but it was interesting. My brother, eventually, as you read in the book, what he did was horrible. And that was 2017 was a very bad year for me. That's for sure.
We think he may have been mentally affected by this phenomenon. And, it is a disturbing phenomenon. People frequently have psychological issues for years after having it happen.
May put it this way. My brother was not a stupid person. He would teach calculus for fun. He was a draftsman and engineer. He was a very intelligent man. And whether that has anything to do with it or not.
But he had emotional problems for his whole life. And it was very hermit-like. And we believe it had to do with this phenomenon. Or at least was a contributing factor.
Yeah. Well, the book is really fascinating, and you've done a great job. Again, the book is called Who They Are and What They're Up To. Leslie and Stephen Shaw, my special guests, why don't you guys tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or anything else you're working on?
Well, of course, the book is available on Amazon and Ingram Books. But the average person usually orders off of Amazon. And of course, we have our blurb is there and our description about the book and all of the reviews that have taken on it. People can study those as well.
And we also have about 10 blogs so far we posted as far as extra information.
Oh, yes. That's on whotheyarebook.com is our website where we're posting our blogs. And the book can be ordered there, but it's usually through Amazon.
And we have an engagement coming up in
Morro Bay. Yeah. August 19th will be at Coalesce Bookstore in Morro Bay.
Morro Bay. What state is that? Is that California?
That's in California. Okay. It's a beautiful coastal town in California up in the Monterey area. And we'll be up there in front of a bookstore, Coalesce Bookstore. We're a pop-up event during their farmer's market on the 19th. This is Saturday.
Morro Bay. 19th. I have to look that up. It sounds beautiful. I love little
gorgeous
towns.
If you're a birder or a bird watcher, it's a great area to go, especially for seabirds. It's because we're birders. We're amateur birders.
Okay. I see. Okay. My son is one too. I mean, to be 15 year old and he's, you know, into football. He also likes to watch birds. He's a bird watcher too. So that's great. All right. So we're going to have to put that one on our list. Again, the book is called Who They Are and What They're Up To. Leslie and Stephen Shaw, my special guests, Leslie and Stephen. Many blessings to both of you guys. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you as well, K-Town.
Thank you.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.